It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
William won't say it, so I will. What fresh hell is this?
As you can see, the effect that Tony usually has, he's taken it off, and now
yes,
we see the real Tony.
This is normal me. I'm actually a cat in a hoodie, and my mouth doesn't move real well in response to the things I'm saying, and my arms do nothing.
I mean, I hope people realize how sophisticated the filter that you've been using really is. I mean, so lifelike.
I paid a lot of money for that fat guy.
Yeah, and here we are with the real you. Something else.
Seriously, when I did the panda, I could like stick out my tongue, but this one's not working. But I can do eyebrows, and it makes the ears go, which is weird. I can even do just one, and I can start to smile. The weirdest part is if I start to look up, I will keep my mouth closed as I do this.
Doesn't know what to do with your mouth.
What is that about?
Doesn't know what to do with your mouth there.
Something. I don't know. And like literally my hands are in front of my face right now. I wonder if I do this now. See, now it doesn't know I'm talking. But then I do this. And yeah. This is literally as I went to log in, Zoom was like, hold on. We're going to do an update. And then when I went in to set, I do have a filter that I set to make the lighting better. And I went in there and it had this thing that said avatars and next to it, a giant word beta. And it lets me do this. And it's definitely in beta because, well, just look. For those of you listening to the audio, I'm currently a cat in a hoodie being very, very roughly animated.
I'm just me because my setup won't let me do what he's
yeah,
doing.
It looks like maybe at the moment it's just for Zoom Pro. I don't know. But that's fine. I mean, we literally, I think, have spent as much time as it's useful on it. Like, this is it. This is as exciting as it gets. All right. So, let me put on the filter. Oh, the filter is back on. All right, the filter's there. All right, good. So, hello, everyone! Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where one of us is secretly an animated cat disguised as a fat bearded dude on a couch. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 598. Weirdly, the animated cat wears pants. I don't know what that's about. But
yeah.
Your filter doesn't wear pants.
No, I specified a filter that doesn't wear pants. Like, that was part of the whole deal. I specified a KitchenAid mixer right behind me.
Yeah.
All of that stuff.
Yeah, it's very authentic.
Over here, very authentic. A yogurt maker that my wife bought years ago and used once. Yeah. For those of you just joining us for the first time, I'm a cat.
He's a kitty cat.
And an instance, instance. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, whoever would like to, writes into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. And the hat, magically, on its own, makes us read those emails and talk about them, except when we don't feel like it. So, yeah. How's your week been? Crazy.
This quarter's
pretty
awful.
Almost done.
I've talked to other fellow students in the same, like, I know students, you know, and these are students who are very smart and get good grades, because I mean, I know them well enough to know, I mean, yeah, I know them well enough to know both of those things. And they're like turning in assignments late. And I mean, it's bad for everybody. So I don't know what the deal is.
From what you've described, it sounds very harrowing.
Well, for this quarter, like I said, for one, all of the quarters are really semesters worth of material smashed into 10 weeks. That's already bad. Then you have 3 week breaks between, which at first, when you first start, you think, oh, wow, that'll be nice. It's like nothing. You know, you do not recover from that 3 weeks. And so I think there's some burnout happening. And, the typical answer to that coming up is, oh, you know, need to do self-care. So it's like, well, yes, we do. That is a thing, a skill we need to learn. But also maybe these lessons and these quarters could be structured in a way that, you know, are not so unreasonable. But
also, in case you've noticed, one side effect of this particularly rough quarter, William started using the royal we when referring to himself.
I'm not just talking about myself.
Earlier, he told me we were not amused about the cat thing.
Anyway, it's fine. It's just been frustrating. And, there's not a whole lot left before practicum. And well, after this quarter's over, it'll be just a year before practicum and internship. Now, the practicum is a class and there might be class like stuff involved. But for the most part, all the classwork stuff will be done then. And that'll be nice, because it's been pretty stressful.
Yeah.
How about you? How has your week been?
Well, I had some pancakes.
you always hate it when I don't mention.
With broccoli, like I do.
And that was interesting. How was that? Pancakes with broccoli. That's kind of an unusual.
Better than you'd think. Yeah, William and I got together. And right before William and I got together, I had my second dietitian appointment.
Yeah.
And I need to preface things. Weight, increased weight and poor health are not associated. Skinny does not mean healthy. Fat does not mean unhealthy. There are a lot of factors with a lot of different people. Also, how much weight you hold, how easily you gain or lose weight, have a lot of factors. The big one being genetics. And I personally don't care how much I weigh insofar as that measure on its own. I'm currently in a situation where I personally would benefit health-wise from a loss of weight. And that is part of why I'm in this current program. That being said, I lost 13 pounds in 27 days, people. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's like a little bit more and I would have been bad. Like, you're not supposed to lose weight that fast. They just thought it was a good thing at the clinic. But I'm like, yeah, that's because they're bariatric surgery people. And when you get that, you lose it way faster than that. But they were very pleased.
You should have said, don't be impressed, I had twins.
They each weighed 6.5 pounds. It's not good. So this diet and exercise crap is working.
Yeah, it is. It's good.
Feeling better physically. I'm feeling better mentally. My blood sugars are down. I haven't checked my blood pressure. I would imagine that's a lot better. I'm kicking ass. I'm digging that.
I just want to say,
I got to meet with the psychologist. We'll see how that goes.
I also only care about your weight insofar as I care about how long you live. That's what I care about.
And that's my jam.
And by the way, there are people who are heavy who live a long time. I mean, that's another thing.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
That's not really a thing to worry about unless actually, it's a thing to worry about.
Actually, talking with a friend whose relative is also heavy and is working on things to do that, and their whole thing is they've got major heart problems because of it, but they're also really huge like me and don't have diabetes because, again, so many factors, and your genetics are a huge one. Right. And so I have certain health problems and other ones that you might expect to be attached to something like this, I don't have. And some people don't have much of any. I mean, there are physical considerations. And I think it'd be unfair to say that my weight isn't part of what has contributed to a lot of my back issues.
Sure.
And it's great that those are being better. Physically, I'm doing a lot better. Trying to be circumspect. My body is working better in general than it used to. I'm feeling healthier and more energetic and things like that. I'm still sleeping like shit. I don't know what that's about. It's been happening for months now. I feel like I maybe am starting to turn a corner where the exercise is making it a little bit better, but I missed a bunch of gym days in a row because I cannot figure out my phone's alarm anymore, even though I've used it for years. I don't know what happened. I missed a couple days because I pulled a muscle and I was trying to take it easy. And then I was like, okay, so we're going to go tomorrow. And I set the alarm and it didn't go off. And I slept through it, and it was because I set it the weekend alarm, not the weekday alarm. And so then the next day, I'm like, okay, got it this time. We do it. Honestly. And I woke up a few minutes before the alarm, and I was like, I'll just wake up, and I'll check my email till it goes off. And it hit the time I was supposed to wake up, and it still didn't go off. And I went and looked because I had set it for the weekend again. But I was awake, so then I went. And then yesterday, because I had slept very bad the night before, I took a little bit of nap in the afternoon, and afterwards I set the alarm for the next morning to go to the gym, and we're at dinner last night and the alarm goes off because I set it for p.m. instead of a.m. I don't know what's happening. I'm losing my mind. But today the alarm was set correctly and I did go in today. And yeah, that's all going great. What else is going on? We had a really good time having lunch at IHOP, and I did.
We did
create a very comprehensive meal that included pancakes and syrup, and that did not cheat on my diet at all. But it did involve pancakes and syrup, and then nearby some broccoli. So that was weird. But we both agreed it was way better broccoli than anybody has a right to expect from IHOP.
Yeah, it was really nice looking.
It was pretty tasty. It was lightly roasted. It was kind of weird. which, come to think of it, that is strange. Maybe they just burned it slightly. I don't know. It was nice. Yeah, we had a pretty good time there. Yep. Mostly bitching about kids. yeah, there's not a whole lot else going on. So that TV show Arcane that I talked about, the weird steampunky thing.
Yeah.
With the cool animation.
Yeah.
So I like it still so far, and I keep planning to watch it. It is kind of dark dystopian stuff. And I finished the third episode. And I'm trying to avoid any spoilers and things like that here. Those of you who have seen it should remember the third episode. I haven't gone on to the fourth episode, but I highly suspect the fourth episode is going to start with a jump in time, based on what little I know about the show. The ending of that episode was rough. I don't think anyone would disagree. It was violent. It was very tragic. There was some serious stuff. It also managed to combine a couple of my real personal psychological triggers. So it's the hardest thing I've watched on TV in as long as I can remember. Like, my chest physically hurt after watching that. And I sat through the credits and turned off the TV. And for a while, I just sort of sat here. And, like, at first I was like, why the hell did nobody warn me about this? But I really think it's, like, very much personal triggers that just really got me. But, and again, it's one of those, like, and I just to clear it up, I was like, no rape, nothing like that going on. That was not. If that was, I'd just be like, oh yeah, no, fuck this, I'm out. And I wouldn't even say rape's a particular trigger for me. It's just a shitty thing I don't like to watch in my TV shows and movies. But this, like, hit at certain, like, personal fears and issues that I have that just really, and this is a show that is, like, trying to be super serious. Like, when people experience trauma, they don't give a weird soliloquy. They, like, scream and, like, snot pours from their face. Like they do it real. And again, in just the most amazing animation. It's gorgeous stuff, even when it's just snot coming out. So, haven't been back yet. But I think I will, because also I have reason to believe I don't think this can happen again in the show. The way the plot works, I don't think this particular set of triggers could necessarily happen again. And it is very interesting. And I really like sort of steampunk type things, but far too often it's just a visual aesthetic or like a style. And it's hard to find things that actually tell stories within that kind of setting and the implications of that kind of setting. And right. This one seems to be doing that. And I like that a lot more. So I'd still in general would recommend it. But it is kind of dark in places. But yeah, it's gorgeous. And real good music on it too. We haven't watched a lot else. Nope, the new Jordan Peele is available to purchase on video on demand, so I think we'll jump on that pretty soon. We haven't done it. We actually went out to eat for date night.
Yeah, you said you were going to.
Yeah. We didn't go where I thought we were going to go. We ended up going to Red's Ale House over in North Liberty, which is, and I was like, Trish wanted to go, and I was like, okay. I'm like, it's going to be real busy, even on a Wednesday, because I know that we're post-pandemic, but pre-pandemic, even on a Wednesday, it lines out the door and just so packed. And I was like, people are coming back. No, wasn't that bad. And most of them were sitting outside, so it was not a big issue. And I, again, had a really good meal that pretty much fit my diet. At first I didn't think I was going to be able to, but they had a cool salad that looked good and I could get some salmon on it, and I didn't even touch any of my carbs, so I was like, hell, we'll get some sweet potato fries, which were really good, and I could only eat like half the order to be fair, but it was really tasty, so
good.
I was pleased. We don't get out a lot, especially Trish doesn't get out a lot anymore. So
can you not have cheese at all, or how does
I can work? I can. Most cheese, there's basically nothing I can't have.
Okay.
It's just a matter of how much it costs me. And most cheese, for 1 ounce of it, which is the equivalent of a slice you'd get in the deli or whatever of cheese, is one high fat protein, which means it fills one protein bubble and two fat bubbles.
Wow.
And for perspective, I never have more than four fat bubbles in a meal. And like at lunch, I only have three. So gotta be sparing with the cheese. I found at Hy-Vee, they have a few low fat ones. It's a comparative low fat, but I found a low fat Swiss, and I'm a big fan of Swiss. That I can count as a medium fat protein, so just one fat and one protein, and it tastes good. I mean, it's not exactly the same, the texture is a little different, but it tastes pretty good. And so I've been having that fairly regularly with lunch. Because I'll make like a sandwich and I can have meat and it'll be lean protein, and then I can use that. And if in fact, often I have enough fat left over that I can put like some mayo on it. But yeah, no, I can still have cheese. I can still have chocolate cake. It's just a matter of how much and how much it costs. I'm really digging it, and I know I've talked about it a lot, but I'm really kind of digging this diet because it is, so many diets nowadays are, this is the bad stuff. You want to eat as little of that as you can. And this is the good stuff. You can just sort of eat a shit ton of that if you want. You know, like keto, you got to almost no carbs, but you know, meats and fats or whatever, as much as you want. And diabetic, similar thing. Traditional low fat ones, like, you know, you have to avoid fat, but you can eat, you know, plenty of like other fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. This one is like, no, you need to eat everything. But you need to eat a relatively specific amount of everything, and don't eat more than that, but also don't eat less than that. Mm-hmm. So don't have a meal where you don't have enough fat. Like, you need the fats, you need the proteins, you need the carbs, and they have a specific thing for you need the veggies, because freaking nutrients in the veggies. And there are other things. The carbs are all the carbs, but like the dietitian said, it'd be good if you could, more of your carbs could be fruit, because currently they were almost none fruit. So I've been working on that, and that's been good. Because usually I can just sort of sneak them in. I get two or three carbs a meal. So, like this morning, I have this low sugar oatmeal that I like, that I microwaved, and one thing of that is just one carb. So for my other carb, I had this lovely plum that I got at Hy-Vee, and it was quite tasty. And that's before I got to my three scrambled eggs with some butter and some non-fat cottage cheese mixed in, make it creamier. So it was a good breakfast.
Nice.
But yeah, it's we learned at work one time. So the stuff about thinking outside the box, and that's how you get creative and shit. Yeah. Mostly bullshit. It's actually having some sort of box increases the creativity, because if you're thinking outside of it, you can just come up with whatever the hell you want, and it may not be feasible, it may not be interesting. Like, if you have certain restrictions, it forces you to work within that space.
You mentioned this before when yes. You said at work you learned that brainstorming might not be a really good thing to do. Also, we've talked about this many times. There are a lot of creators who make amazing things, and then they become really famous, and someone says, here, carte blanche, you can do whatever you want. And then the thing they do without any restrictions yep. is terrible. Yep. It actually yep. helped their creativity to have someone there kind of holding their leash.
Because if you have a parameter and you're stopped from just going anywhere, you're like, okay. So within this budget, within this right. time frame, what can I do? And that spurs creativity. Well, it's fucking happening with my diet. Mm. I was texting my mom the other day about it, and I realized, so like, what do you eat for breakfast?
I don't eat anything for breakfast.
All right. Have you ever had a point in your life where you ate breakfast regularly?
No, but I have had
You're a fucking farmer. What the hell?
I have had breakfast things in the house that, like, I'll go, oh, I could eat, you know, it's 9 o'clock. I could eat that right now. And so I would, but not regularly. Like,
okay.
My wife will buy
cereal. You're a hot mess. No one lives that way.
But my wife will buy cereal and it'll take me a long time to eat it, but I will occasionally eat cereal, for example.
A lot of people, most people, eat breakfast. Okay. Or if they don't, at some other point within their lives, say as a child or something, they regularly ate breakfast.
I mean, cereal sometimes. Yeah, sometimes.
I am horrified to learn that, like, even as a child, like, your parents didn't make you eat fucking breakfast.
Sometimes.
What? How did they decide when? They were like, Wednesday. This time you should eat some breakfast.
There were five of us, and there was a time where they both had jobs. So they would buy things for us to make our own breakfast. And then it was up to us. And most times I didn't.
I don't know how you're still alive. Well, in my experience, I mean, listeners, I would ask you, what do you eat for breakfast? My experience personally is at various points in my life, I tend to roughly have the same thing for breakfast every day for a long period.
Mm.
So like before I started this diet, it was typically a couple of my high fiber tortillas and a yogurt. And sometimes I would put meat in them. Sometimes I would scramble some eggs, put in them, sometimes just peanut butter, but that was pretty much it. In the past, I also had a thing where I would have microwave sausage and yogurt, and then sometimes kind of fruit. Obviously, cereals, being a cereal and milk, is a classic one. But the point is, whatever I had, I basically had the same thing at least every weekday morning for months, if not years at a time. I currently believe I have about four or five different breakfasts in no particular rotation. And I keep coming up with more because I'll go to the store and find some other thing. And I've never lived my life like that. I've never been like, what out of the myriad things that I sometimes have for breakfast am I going to have today?
There was a time where for a very long period, Abby would buy polenta.
Mm-hmm.
And I would eat that in the morning. There was probably a good, I don't know, 6-9, maybe a whole year. That was a period during which we were podcasting. I think I even mentioned it. So there was that time period.
A good breakfast because it's basically grits. It's a slightly coarser grits, and grits make a good breakfast.
And then when I worked at McGregor's, I got a ride to work every day, and the guy I rode with would always pick something up at just right up the road from McGregor's was a convenience store, and he'd always get something there. And I noticed that they had egg and cheese, like really awful microwavable egg and cheese biscuits.
Oh yeah,
I didn't get them every time, but I would get those sometimes.
Yeah, well, and that. For me, I had a standard thing until this diet where every Monday after I drop Trish off, I go get McDonald's breakfast. And that was once a week. Every once in a while, I do it otherwise. But that was my tradition, was every Monday I'd do that. Trish's current breakfast is, she used to make it. Now I make it for the whole week, Monday through Thursday. It is a sort of a parfait and sort of overnight oats at the same time. Is we have these containers, and I put in some steel cut oats and some milk and then some sort of fruit. And then this particular yogurt that she likes on top of it, and then just put it all in the container. And there's just four of them. And I just stick them in with her lunch every day.
Mm.
And she likes them, and I mix up what fruit it is, but it's still the same thing four times a week. At this point, some days it's cereals involved. Some days, a lot of days, eggs are involved, but not always. Peanut butter toast is involved at different times. This new oatmeal, I've got all sorts of things. And whether or not I want to incorporate fruit, just recently I was like, oh shit, English muffins exist. Mm-hmm. I haven't had an English muffin in like three goddamn years. And so I got some English muffins, put a little butter on it. Oh,
yeah, sorry. They're great.
Oh, and sometimes when I
drive Abby to work,
changing around like this, and that it encourages that, because again, I have to get all of these things,
right?
And so I just have different pieces to hook together. Lunch is starting to get a little samey, and I think I want to mess with that a little bit, but I'm
sometimes when I drive Abby to work, I'm tempted to go somewhere for breakfast or lunch if that's the time period, but then I just say nah, it's not interested. I don't know what the deal is with that.
It's probably not a good way. I mean, it's probably not a bad thing to do, especially because a lot of these places, I mean, the very nature, the fat, the salt, and the sugar,
yeah,
are designed to essentially have at least mild addictive impact. And so you go, and then you'll want to go again.
But breakfast is supposed to be good for you. I mean, the whole most important meal of the day thing's not so much a thing. But
yeah, it's kind of but
you are kind of supposed to eat breakfast, but I just never, not never, but rarely ever feel like it.
It does vary. They've actually, more recent studies have shown that for some people, not eating breakfast can be good. It sort of depends on what your day is like and what you eat later in the day and what your goals are. I mean, for some people, there are certain types of weight loss plans that can include basically not eating breakfast. Oh. Those can be tricky. Like, part of the reason my diet is how it is it's meant to be spread out very carefully over the day so that you don't get hungry. Because if it gave me the ability to like fuck around with it, like I'm going to take the carbs from breakfast, I'm going to use them at dinner so I can really go crazy. That's all well and good, except A, my body doesn't process the same that way. But also the odds that then in the morning I'm like, oh shit, I'm hungry, and I cheat are much higher. So it's, this one in particular is meant to fuel you throughout the day. But I don't think this is as interesting to other people as it is to me, and I'm losing interest in my own words. So but I do think it's very cool. What I've learned a lot from this, because this is a specific diet designed for a specific thing, it's not gonna be for everybody. I give nutritionists a bad rap. Nutritionists are really handy. Like, some of the biggest life-changing things I've had have been doctor-ordered visits to nutritionists. And they have either taught me things that I legit didn't know or gave me new perspective on eating that has sort of changed how I do things.
That's cool.
It was, when I got diabetes, it was the most useful, I'd say, of the things. I had to meet with a variety of people to sort of introduce me to all the new concepts associated with being diabetic. And the most useful by far was the nutritionist. So that stuff, great. And the best news, I was worried that skim milk in my cereal counted as a carb and I wasn't going to have to get to have cereal anymore. But on this particular plan, milk and skim milk and non-fat yogurt, when eaten not as part of a milk snack, count as a protein. So I'm good.
Awesome.
And my three milk snacks a day are now optional. If I don't feel like I need it, I don't have to have it. And so far that has translated into me having about two out of the three a day. I haven't had one yet today, but we'll see. All right. It's happened again.
What's that?
Once again, our podcast has been on the brink of utter annihilation. And once again, Azure Talon has saved us. And once again, those words taste like ash in my mouth to say Azure Talon has saved us. But we got one email in the account. And it's from him. I think you should read it.
You think I should read it?
Yeah, I think I read the last one. I don't remember. I didn't grab my thing to read it, so you should do it.
Has someone commented on our YouTube channel?
Yeah, I've been having a conversation, and I hate this. I almost didn't talk about this because the YouTube user in question is listed as Maggie Hutt. I don't think I know that name. It's going to be real shitty if, like, we went to college or something and I just forgot the name.
Maggie Hatton, it looks like.
Oh, okay. Does that mean something to you?
No.
Because if there's one thing I have learned, thanks to Facebook, is that there are plenty of people that I spent a lot of time with in, like, college and high school whose names are completely unrecognizable to me, having nothing to do with whether or not they got married. Like, just their original name. I'm like, who? What? But then they'll talk about things we did. I'm like, oh, yeah. So, Maggie, I am very sorry if I'm supposed to know you.
Ooh, what are you guys talking about?
I know of exactly one Maggie that I know now, and that's not her last name. But she brought up the TV show Yellowstone, which I have not seen. Modern Westerns are a little less my thing. I don't know. My sister is very into it. It's funny because there's actually a character on the show that has the same first and last name as one of my sisters-in-law. Although very different character, but you can literally buy t-shirts with her quotes on it and stuff. And we thought about getting them, but she's a very different character. So none of them really seem to work for my sister-in-law. But apparently they made like a prequel series using the same actors called 1883.
Not the same actors.
Oh, I thought it was the same actors.
How could it be the same? Oh, you mean like playing different parts?
Yeah, actors do that. If it was the same characters, I would have said the same characters.
Yeah, sorry. No, they weren't the same actors.
Oh, was it not? Okay, you've seen this?
I've seen all the Yellowstone stuff. Yeah,
you have. You should have commented on Facebook or on YouTube.
I didn't know anyone was saying anything on YouTube. I don't get alerts about that.
Oh, I guess you wouldn't, would you? So you've seen Yellowstone?
Yeah, we like it.
All right. Have you seen 1883?
Like that too.
Apparently there's going to be another one called 1934 or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll watch them. We like them. In Yellowstone, there's this character who gets in trouble with the law, and the ranch in Yellowstone, the guy that runs it, he likes to recruit people like this to work on the ranch. So this guy gets recruited as an alternative to being in jail. He's a young guy, and he doesn't know anything about working on a ranch, and he gets injured riding horses. And eventually he competes in a rodeo and does really well. And he's got a whole arc, this guy, and they're going to have a spinoff show. So he ends up going down to a ranch in Texas, and that's in the show. And I think they're going to have a spinoff show that takes place at
that ranch. Yeah.
And I think this kid is going to like be one of the stars in it. Well, he's from Iowa. He's from Mount Vernon, that guy. If Maggie's watching, she'll know who I'm talking about. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, we like it. We think it's pretty neat. That kid from Iowa, you know, he talks to Kevin Costner about Iowa sometimes, because Costner made a movie here, you know?
He did.
And Costner is kind of a, what the kid said was that Kevin has a lot of fond memories of Iowa and likes Iowans and stuff. So they talk about Iowa sometimes.
Yeah. And it's got a pretty impressive cast. Costner's in it, and Katie Sackhoff's in it. Lou Diamond Phillips is in it.
Katie Sackhoff? I don't think so.
I thought Katie Sackhoff was in it. Or am I thinking of Longmire?
I don't think so, unless I just don't remember. She's not a major main character in it.
Maybe I'm thinking along more for that.
But yeah, I mean, it's really well written, well acted. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of melodrama around something that's probably actually pretty mundane, you know, running a ranch. But it's one of those things where I guess one way you can describe it is people take like King Lear, and they set it in different kind of things. And I mean, not literally King Lear, you know what I mean? It's kind of like that kind of dramatic tension between families and people and powerful people, you know, it's kind of like that. And it, like I said, it's a lot of melodrama, but I mean, I like it. We like it. Abby and I both do. So when I say Abby and I don't mean just myself.
We find it quite entertaining. Do you think I would like it?
I mean, so there's two levels there. One level is, do I think there's anything in it that would like really disturb you? I don't think.
Yeah, so. I mean, I figured you'd cover that initially.
Then there's the other level of, is it even a topic that would interest you? I don't think so. I don't. Okay. I mean, are you generally into kind of the, well, here's a setting and there's a lot of politics and there's a lot of meanness and there's a lot of, sometimes someone's going to kill somebody, you know, that kind of intrigue stuff. Are you kind of, you're not really into that, are you?
Not inherently, but I'm also not into it.
Oh, okay.
What I would say is, depends on the characters, depends on the arcs, like the concept of here's a setting and melodramatic things happen and betrayals and twists and, you know, soap opera shit. I absolutely sometimes really am into that. Okay. And other times really not. It sort of depends on the details. And the details both in terms of what kind of arcs do we have and also what kind of characters, how dynamic are the characters are. Are there ones I would like? Are there ones that grow and change that I could appreciate that with and like things?
I don't know. I mean, the acting's really good. And I mean, all the stuff you just said about arcs and people growing and changing. Yeah, that's all there. I mean, I feel like one of the things that Abby and I like about it is, you know, it is kind of rural. So, you know, you just, it feels like they're telling a story in kind of your, I don't know, idiom or something. And I don't typically like soap opera melodrama stuff, but I like, well, like the arc of that kid I was telling you about, who's kind of a criminal, but he learns how to ride and he does well in a rodeo and he ends, you know, that's a pretty cool arc to me. You know, I like watching a person go through that kind of growth and change and stuff. And there's quite a bit of that in there, I guess, but also in a rural type of setting, and sometimes even being a little bit celebrating certain rural things
and
that I
is
celebrate.
Because rural sort of agricultural societies and so forth, in general, I don't give a shit about. So that could be a fact.
There's also a Native American aspect with you know, Native American conflicts with the ranch and stuff that I find, again, it's a little bit, you know, it's fictional and it's a little bit ginned up, but I think there's also a lot of realistic stuff in there. Interesting things to consider about how Native people have adapted to things in the American West, how they continue to adapt and how they might run into conflicts even still with Anglos who live out there. You know, that stuff's interesting. And
now,
this
is going to be rough for you because I think you've just created a homework for yourself. Unless you already can tell me, I'm going to need you to look into the origin and meanings of the phrase ginned up. I have heard it before.
Yeah.
So too. I know you didn't just invent it.
No, I don't use it very often either.
I don't know where it comes from. I'm very curious now. Partially because 7 times out of 10 with these things, it turns out it used to be a racial slur, but also just because I am curious what it might be referring to.
Yeah. That's a
so
good
you're going to have to do that and report back to us next week. The big thing, and we'll again, see. I feel so bad if I know Maggie. Like, I really, it's awful. But if I don't, and you don't, this is our first confirmed patter that neither of us know at all. And that's pretty cool. I dig that.
Well, her last name's Hatton, so maybe she's related to the hat. I don't know.
Oh. So finally, the hat's pulling its own goddamn weight, bringing in listeners.
Finally. Come on, hat.
Hat. Hatton. And she's like, what you doing? Just Hatton. Is that what y'all say when, like, you're listening with your headphones and a coworker comes up? It's like, what you doing? Just Hatton.
I'm just Hatton.
Because I've already got the point that I just call it the hat all the time. I don't even usually call it the podcast. No, I just call it the hat. All right. Read the thing Azhdallan wrote. He's saving our butts here.
It's not a question.
Well, fuck off then. No, emails can be about anything you want. So
maybe it's a little bit of a question. He says, dudes. Oh, he just calls us dudes. Not anything about the hat or hat wranglers or any of that stuff. Just dudes.
Dudes.
I bought a Fasta Pasta. Is that how you pronounce it? Or is it Fasta Pasta? Fasta.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, so I don't know how it's pronounced.
Anyway, and it's awesome. So let's hear about some of your favorite pasta shapes and microwave gadgets. And go. Azure Talon. So is it a microwave gadget that
I don't know. I'm gonna check this shit out. I will find out.
maybe we were supposed to know what that
spell meant. It for me.
It's FASTA and then pasta. So it's pasta or fasta pasta. I don't know. Fasta pasta. I don't know.
Pasta. It is apparently a microwave pasta cooker. Founded in Adelaide, Australia. That's one of those things again, like peeling garlic, where I'm like, it'd be cool to have a faster way to do it, but I don't really have a trouble with the way I do it right now. So, but I don't have kids. I suppose that could be a factor.
When I was young, microwave gadgets were pretty popular. Like, oh, you can use this to do this in a microwave. We did get them and then almost never used them. And we have no microwave gadgets now. So.
And I mean, I was born and raised in the era of Ron Popeil. So
all sorts
of that shit. The only thing we really have now is a microwave steamer. It's just plastic and it's just got a little thing in it because it's just easier to steam it and not boil it. Real simple. But otherwise, we don't really have that many. We don't microwave as much as we used to. That may again be because I'm home now and I just cook things, but it doesn't come
up as often. Our microwave broke. We bought a new one and it sat in a box, I think, for like 2 or 3 years even. So we obviously weren't microwaving anything then.
We use the toaster oven a lot, and especially in the summer, because you can basically do everything you can do with the oven, but it generates less heat in the house. I've been thinking, because our microwave's on its last legs, maybe we get one of the, now they have these like all-in-one things where it's like a microwave and a toaster oven and a convection oven and everything all in one box. I've been wondering about that. If you have any experience with those, let us know in the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, or comment on YouTube, because one of us at least sees those.
My grandma had one of those.
Oh yeah.
And it worked really good. I mean, she could, the great thing was because it she could use it as a convection oven, but it, like you were just saying, it didn't heat up the house really at all like the oven would. And yeah. if it was just a little thing, you know, so it kind of worked like a toaster oven kind of thing, and then she could use it as a microwave and other times. So it's kind of nice, that versatility. I usually when you get integrated things like that, and the same like with if you get a printer that's a scanner and a fax machine and all that, sometimes you get those integrated units, there's just more things to break down, and then you can't get it fixed. It's or because nobody
it's a quality services thing. It. It's like, well, right. For the cost of just one good one of these, you can have three mediocre ones in a single device.
Right. But then with one of them breaks, the whole thing's broken, and you lose and all three also, all three functionalities. So I don't know.
We'll see. We're not moving real fast on it. And honestly, all our appliances need to be replaced. Pasta. Let's talk about it. It's just like us. Everybody's got them. What are they good for? What is the plural of pasta? Just pastas?
No.
This is weird. This is a lot of things that are like this. I grew up a fan of long pasta. That was my favorite. The stuff you got to twirl around the fork and things like spaghettis, linguines, fettuccines. And I married somebody who's like, those are a pain in the butt. Just get the smaller things that are like bite size. Rotini, farfalla, mostaccioli, things like this. And I eventually realized, those are just way easier to eat. It's way less mess. There's no twisting. There's no having to get it weird on your fork. You just have it. So now we do a lot of those. For many years now, I've been very big into rotini. God, I'm old and boring. Recently, I have kind of switched over to Celentani, which is essentially two tubes that have been twisted together. They kind of look like DNA strands. And that's kind of the best worlds of the twisted pastas and the tubular pastas. And then sometimes it just depends on what it is. I have a couple of dishes that specifically want farfalla, the butterfly shape. And then I occasionally have dishes that I'm like, this needs long noodles. This isn't right with short ones. So you're awful quiet.
I mean, you know, rotini, more than any other pasta, as far as I have experienced, like, captures the stuff.
Right?
Like little rotini, if whatever the sauce is, whatever you have in there, it's going to capture all that in the folds. Now, the tube pasta can do that too a little bit, but not like the rotini can.
Not to the same degree. A mozzarella or a penne doesn't do the same.
Yeah, penne doesn't do it.
By my observations, at least, rotini takes longer to cook and runs more of a risk of undercooking because it is so dense in the middle.
That is a problem. And it also, the expansion factor is significant. Like sometimes when you make penne, it's that way too, but really it's when you make rotini, it just seems like the expansion factor is more, I don't know, more dramatic. It takes up a lot more space than you expected it was going to. But man, it really just captures that flavor.
It is. And I often like it for that. And especially in a pasta salad or something with a real rich sauce. Mm-hmm. Now, I do have to say, so I'm sitting here saying all this stuff about pasta and you're just silent. Which sometimes can mean like I have nothing to add to this. And so as I'm talking more and more and I'm hearing myself, I'm like, this is inane, vapid bullshit about noodles. He's gonna have nothing. And then you come at me with that same energy and I'm like, oh yeah, we're here, we're fucking talking about yeah, rotini, absolutely, with the sauce, we are on the same. So I want to thank you for that. I was starting to lose faith in the topic, and then you matched me and I was like, yes, you're here for this. Recommend giving Celentani a try, though, because really it is a good combination of sort of both kind of things.
Okay.
And it still can give you that solidity you can get from a rotini, but then it still has sort of a lightness of a tube pasta. But yeah, I really like nowadays, well, mixing it up. And that's how I've always been with most foods. I'm like, I get bored easily, so we switch it around. Actually, and maybe this will get controversial, I don't know. What I've recently gotten into, where you're like, I want pasta, but I also kind of want rice, orzo. That stuff is good. It is, the physical properties are very different to work with, but it is really nice if you're somebody like me who I like pasta and I like rice, and it's sort of a ricey pasta. And I do enjoy that. Any experience with some of the gluten-free variants?
Sure, yeah.
We had some friends, and one of them was gluten intolerant. So we tried what, I forget what it's called now, but there's a particular big brand out there right now that's chickpea-based.
Mm.
And it was good, and I like chickpeas. Again, I would not confuse, like if you blindfolded me, I would absolutely know the difference.
Right.
But it held the texture and the bite of pasta, and it was tasty. So that was pretty pleasant.
Yeah, the gluten-free pastas I've had, like you said, blindfolded, you could tell the difference, but it wasn't like, I mean, they were good. Just a little bit different, but good.
Similar with the whole wheat ones. Maybe I like it a little less, so I sort of don't use them anymore. But it's funny because a lot of other grain-based, like a bread, if it's whole wheat versus not versus gluten-free, there's a world of difference.
Big difference, yeah.
But pasta seems to hold up pretty well to scrutiny. I am just experiencing, so, you know, I watched Try Guys videos. The Try Guys as of yesterday, have an actual TV show on TV.
Oh.
On Food Network. They have just begun a weekly series called Without a Recipe Road Trip. And it's a variation on a thing they did called Without a Recipe, where they'd pick a thing like, you have to make a pie. And they all would have to make a pie in a certain number of hours. And they have no recipe. So they don't know how to do it. And it gets crazy. This one is a road trip thing where they go to restaurants and the owner has them try like whatever the specialty is. And then they have to try and recreate it again with no hints about how it works. And the bad news is it's just on TV or Discovery Plus. So I'm not going to be able to watch the show. I'm sad about that. But they had an unaired pilot that they just put up on YouTube. And so just yesterday I was watching, I actually watched it twice because I had Trish watch it later. And in that one, they were doing hand pulled noodles where you like slam them on the table and stuff. They were very bad at it. But what came up a lot was, this isn't a noodle. This is more like pasta. And so I was looking into that because I'm like, what's the difference exactly?
What is the difference exactly?
Well, I mean, and in a very broad sense, pasta is an Italian thing and noodles are an Asian thing, but largely it has to do with the nature of the flour you are using. They're all still mostly wheat flour, some rice flour, obviously, but it has to do with like what kind. So like a lot of pasta is made with semolina, which is, I think, a coarser grind. No, wait, it might be a finer grind. It's a different grind, and that's different. Whereas just a real basic high gluten flour is what you'll get with like an Asian noodle. And in fact, in this show, the recipe for the noodles is just high gluten flour and some water. 2-to-1 ratio. The end. And that's how you make your dough. And these guys were all over the place. Forget how many different kinds of flour. Some of them used 3 different kinds in one recipe. They were adding eggs. They were adding salt. They were adding oil in place, like all sorts of things. So they all came out very different. And one in particular has a sort of history in Italian cooking. So his was very much sort of the yellow pasta look that you'd have. And not the same, but yeah. So pasta has been on my mind recently. That's it. We're out of stuff for the email. So again, this will be our last episode. If you have things you want to say about pasta or the pasta or the pasta rasta or pasta, or
pastafarians.
Oh God. I have an issue with pastafari. I don't like pastafarians.
Yeah.
I used to for a little while. I mean, I remember when the story first came out before somebody decided to make it into an actual religion. And it is an actual religion, though. I forget what state, but what some is? Pastafarianism.
What? I thought you know, I was just joking around. No.
No. Pastafarianism is an actual religion that worships, quote unquote, the flying spaghetti monster.
Yes.
And it is legit in that someone has been elected to a state legislature and their official religion was Pastafarianism, and it tied into them taking their oath of office. So it's a thing. And it bugs me. Because it's just a religion. It's a real, honest to goodness religion whose entire existence is to just mock other people's religion.
Yeah.
And don't get it twisted. Like someone would say the Church of Satan is the same way. And I'm like, no, actually, the Church of Satan is an atheist group who works really hard to defend civil liberties using the power and leverage of an officially recognized church. And it sucks that they have to do that, but I consider that largely what they are doing. Pastafarianism is there just to mock.
What about like the Discordians?
I mean,
but is that the same thing, do you think, or do they actually have something they believe in? Like,
I wouldn't go that far either. I have known legitimate, devout Discordians. In fact, my introduction to Discordianism was with real, honest believers of Discordianism. They were basically part of the pagan group at my college. And so when I was doing a bunch of Wicca stuff, they were doing chaos magic. And we genuinely celebrated some Discordian holidays. I believe we celebrated the start of the season of Aftermath one year. And that was a whole thing. It makes me think a little bit of Scientology. What I think happened is two dudes made it up as a joke.
Discordianism.
Now, yes.
Yeah.
And now people often believe it. It's,
oh, that's interesting.
It's a thing. Well, the thing is, it's also a religion based around a lot of chaos and independent thinking. So I think part of the faith is not taking it too seriously. So I think it gets a little catch 22. And you know, maybe there's a platform of belief for Pastafarianism that I don't know. I don't exactly follow them. And if that's true, somebody let me know. But as near as I can tell, Pastafarianism is based entirely about, oh, you want to get your beliefs all up in my business? Well, fuck you. Flying spaghetti monster. And I'm like, it's shitty. I mean, it's the same way that like Matt Parker and Trey Stone, or Trey Parker and Matt, the South Park guys. Apparently the Book of Mormon is just an amazing award-winning musical. And I'm like, fuck it. It's just designed to make fun of a faith. And it's a faith that I take a lot of issues with, and that has a lot of problems, and that has done some bad things in its history. I don't need a Broadway musical just taking the piss out of it.
I mean, a lot of Mormons enjoy it.
What?
A lot of Mormons enjoy it.
I have never encountered a Mormon who likes Book of Mormon.
I haven't either, but I've read articles where people were interviewing Mormons who were showing up to watch it and thinking it was really funny. And
wow.
It was real, that it really, like, you know, they could laugh at themselves or, you know, whatever.
That is very interesting, because I've never seen it, but I did read a synopsis of it. And it seems incredibly insulting to the whole faith.
Believe me, I'm sure there are Mormons who hate it or offended by it. Yeah. But there were this article was noting that just about every Broadway show had a significant number of Mormons who showed up not to protest it, but to watch and to laugh along with some of the jokes. Because some of the things, you know, like I was a Seventh-day Adventist. There were a lot of things you could say about Seventh-day Adventists to tease them that I would have thought was funny, you know, because, I don't know, everything can be made fun of or teased a little bit.
Absolutely. You know? But in what spirit? And that's the thing. I think that the creators of South Park, because they did this in their show, too. They go after a lot of religions, but they really have a hard on for Mormonism.
Yeah.
And I will admit, in their show, they did one good thing, and they spent a whole episode making fun of it. And then at the very end, the little Mormon kid who was the start of everything was like, you know what? My family was super awesome to you guys, and you just shit all over us. It doesn't matter if you don't believe what I believe. Fuck you guys. And then he wandered off, and they were like, oh my God, that Mormon kid was way cooler than we thought. And I was into that bit there. And I don't believe any Mormon doctrine, and I have some serious issues with a lot of it. But I'm and you know, friends I have, and we have differing beliefs, and you can sort of tease over that. Fine. This seems just about, look at these dumb people.
I mean, I'm not a fan of that kind of thing either, and I've never seen the I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I've just
and read I'm not saying it shouldn't exist or anything, but I'm just like,
right.
I try and have less Schadenfreude in my life in general. And although I am staunchly atheist, I haven't always been, and I understand the good that can come from faith and the need some people have, and that sometimes faith is a matter of where you are and how you were raised and what you've seen.
You know, it's and interesting.
You didn't really have any control over it. Why should I give you shit for it?
Right. And in the studies that we're doing in graduate school, you know, it often comes up in the textbooks about how important a client's faith or religion might be to them, which means that you as the counselor, if you're going to help them, you may have to talk about that. You may even have to, you know, sometimes you may even have to say, well, maybe Joe, maybe what you really need to do is, you know, go to mosque this week, because it sounds like you really need that spiritual, whatever. And when this is presented in textbooks, it's almost always contextualized as with the assumption that the presumed audience that the textbook is speaking to, which is graduate students studying counseling, are going to be reluctant to do this. It's always couched in that context. Like the whole, you know, like they'll say right out, the whole reason we're dedicating a chapter or a section of this chapter to this is because there's some research to suggest that new counselors are reticent to do this for a variety of reasons. Maybe they don't feel like they have the competence or authority to address someone else's faith, or maybe they are not a person of faith themselves, and their inclination is to want to encourage this person to abandon the idea of faith because it's superstitious or whatever.
In our current society, the major dominant faiths tend to believe that other faiths aren't true, and theirs is. And atheists, sort of almost by definition, believe that all of them pretty much aren't true. And so if you are a therapist and you're either of a particular faith or an atheist, the tendency to want to point out that this person who is speaking of a faith that is not yours is talking about made up dookie nonsense. I could see why.
Well, there's also, though,
in a basic human respect thing, part of respecting other humans is respecting their beliefs. You can challenge them where their beliefs interfere in your life or challenge certain practical aspects of how that is lived, but you should still respect people's beliefs.
Well, but of course, also in a counselor's context, there isn't really a reason for you to challenge their beliefs. It's, you know, but I think the cultural context that's being addressed isn't so much whether or not you're not going to believe what they believe or you're going to be an atheist. I mean, that's part of it, but I think a larger thing they're addressing is a lot of people who come to counseling come with the belief that religion causes people a lot of problems. So let's say they're counseling someone who is a non-heteronormative. That person has maybe had a lot of bad experiences with religious people, maybe their own family. And so they come to this with the mindset that religion is problematic for this person, even if it's not. By the way, I mean, there's lots of non-heteronormative people who are very religious, and, you know, they want to be able to go to a church because they believe in God or whatever. But there's some preconceived notions that religion is by and large problematic to mental health. And so they don't really accept the idea that someone's spirituality or religion or some new spirituality or religion the person's discovering is going to be particularly helpful to them. So
yeah, I got into huge debates with people over this, because I think a good argument could be made that the vast majority of organized religion has largely caused a lot of terrible problems and been a major detriment to mental health, but that's in no way across the board. And also, religion and religious institutions are not the same as faith.
No, I mean, I would
same as spiritual belief.
I would argue that a lot of organized things have caused problems, not just organized religion.
Also true. Organized
everything. Because that's the real problem, in my opinion, as you know. So it's not about that it's religious. It's about that
there's
a hierarchy.
Except
some
when it's religious, you have an open excuse to be like, it doesn't have to make sense. At least with other things, you have to like find a way to convince people it does make sense. With a religion, you can be like, God works in mysterious ways. Don't fucking challenge it.
I hear what you're saying, and I think what you're saying is true, although I think these days, like with politics and business and everything, it's like they don't even have to try to make sense anymore.
These modern institutions look an awful lot more like religious institutions. I will agree with you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I absolutely agree with you on that
part. Yeah, it's crazy.
But again, like I can challenge how a faith treats its members and or infringes on people's rights or infringes on the rights of people who don't believe like them. But I still gotta, if people believe what they believe, like there's nothing inherently wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's their actions that I can question, but their beliefs I should respect. And I'm not going to say I'm perfect at this on any stretch of the imagination.
You don't. But. It's not just their actions you can question. You can react. You can respond to their actions.
If
someone kills somebody because of their religion, you can say, "Look, I don't care about your religion, dude. I just care that you killed this person."
Exactly.
And that's
exactly.
That's what we're dealing with here. Not your religion. I don't care about that. But you killed this person, and we're going to deal with that. I mean, I think that's perfectly fair. Yeah.
So. We hope this discussion of pasta has been helpful for you. If you'd like to learn more about pasta, consult your local clergy.
Yeah.
You know, the pasta clergy, which is probably a thing Pastafarians have.
It must. I don't know.
Is there a priesthood in Pastafarianism? I don't know. I want to know more about Pastafarianism, but I don't want to look it up. So if any of you out there know, tell us on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, or go to YouTube. There's this lady named Maggie Hatton who's just turning it into a whole conversation over there. We're jumping over there, so you can talk to us on YouTube also.
Hey, if Pastafarianism turns out to be true, but the people who call themselves Pastafarians were just doing it as a joke,
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Would the spaghetti monster like punish them for only faking it?
I don't
it,
know.
Or...
And this God.
Or would they still get into heaven because they at least faked it? I don't know.
That was not worth it. I was like, this is a fascinating point you've made. Oh no, it's not. It's a real shit joke. I was ready to start a whole new conversation. And then you come in with this little tiny rim shot. And I'm like, God damn. But no, this is a funny idea. I think that's a thing. People who have been hurt by a lot of fundamentalist religions like to fantasize this too. Like fundamentalists die. And then the afterlife, the God they thought was real is real. And he's like, you've completely fucked this up and you are in deep trouble. And that's not the same as like people who don't believe in who abuse religion for their own personal ends, but people who just genuinely like have got it so twisted in their head and they die and their God is like, oh no. What?
You really messed up.
Like that's a fascinating one, but no. I'm sure the Flying Spaghetti Monster was punished the Pastafarians for overcooked. Oh, I hate you so much. Probably good that the podcast is ending here. This will be our last episode because nobody wrote in. And count yourself lucky because this would have been the future of it. Pasta clergy and going to hell for overcooking. If you're on YouTube, like and subscribe because apparently that'll do something. Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, and talk to us about the stuff we've talked about. We're sick of each other. We want to hear from you. Please write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, whatever you want. You know what I think is lacking? that could fill a whole niche there. Nobody seems to ask us for much advice. They ask us about our views on things.
Yeah,
but ask us what college you should go to and shit like that. Ask us for baby names and stuff. Real important life things. William will defer, but I will definitely give you answers. No promises they'll be good, but I will advise you. Also go to athetheater.com and look at all the things William's made. Also go to smashwords.com and look up ODDWINGS. It's a book called Odd Wings. I wrote it. It's good. Buy it and read it. It only costs $3 and it's short.
And it is good.
And listen again next week. Or else the Flying Spaghetti Monster will get you. You got a pasta pun? Do you have a pun? Come on, you know you want to. I'm kidding. You're not allowed to speak anymore.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.